It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Why aren't we afraid? It's not like we don't know bad guys are there. We just kind of, I don't know, the more you understand them, the less you fear them. You know, if you're going to be on the list, be on tippy top of the list. It's a little bit safer. Right up until, it's not. So that's one thing. One of the benefits, you know, of every single word that ever came out of my mouth on the radio for 7 years is archived. And it's saved on disk, and it's backed up on hard drives, and, you know, so it's there. I always knew from the beginning in this email thing back in 94, I'm going, of course it's out there. Every freaking keystroke you ever done, you know, there it is. So I was careful, careful to be clear, careful to be, make sure that I'm sure you make mistakes and misspeak and get dates wrong, that kind of, whatever. But, I mean, in the whole, you can go, no, that doesn't sound like Ernie. I got Ernest Hancock 2.0 on my website going around saying all kinds of stuff. So we just put the membership number up by the name. I'm 1003. So I guess the webmaster started with 1000 and did him and the senior editor and then myself. So I'm number 3. 1003, Ernest Hancock, that's me. But Ernest Hancock, number 29,000 and whatever, that's somebody else. But you just let it run its course, whatever. The Meredith Whitney, there's not enough time in this segment to do this because it's only like a 4-minute segment. When we come back, we'll go ahead and start with her because the financial sector, the future of that is it's not obvious to most people because the stock market shooting up over 11,000 from like 8,800 or something, it's, oh, we're saved. Based on what? Based on manufacturing, based on export, based on sales, based on inventory, based on unemployment rates, based on housing values, based on what? It's based on the banks making ka-ching. The financial sector, that's where the money is. That's where they're getting all their resources. So I'm going, okay. Is that the American economy? Well, according to who? Because a lot of times you'll have these different pension funds. You'll have people that just invest in the Dow as a general stock itself. They'll put all kinds of different money markets based on different, that's an index to whatever, and you got more derivatives going on and, on and on and on and on. What value does it have for the stock market to be up or down? Why? It's going to benefit somebody. And it's benefiting the banks now. For how long? Where's the next program? They're trying to create another program now that have another $500 billion or something that they're going to pull from all these little banks and everybody can contribute for the next bailout. Of who? Well, I guarantee who gets bailed out didn't put that much in. And this is what's going on around the world. Greece is, they're done, man. Done. What do they want, $150 billion or something? It doesn't even matter. Europe is about ready to fold up its European Union tent. And the only way to say what they want to do is go to a global currency. And a lot of people say they're not going to do it. I know they want to. Will they try? We'll talk about it when we come back.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, I keep promising, here it comes. Meredith Whitney, and it's dry, blah, blah, blah. I hate they use big words, and he'll explain what you, and I'll do my best to explain it as best I can get it. But I tell you, this is, where we're going. We got Morpheus on the line. Let's go ahead and get him taken care of, because I'm sure it's something important. Go ahead, Morpheus.
Yeah, I'm over here at the Capitol, and we have a gathering of Mexican Americans, and they have a picture of Jan Brewer in a Nazi outfit saying, "This is Hitler's daughter, history repeats herself," where she classifies people whether they are where they are born. So this SB 1070 bill is not going away. And it looks like Phoenix is going to be the center of the universe again, and we're going to just wake up a lot of people with what these bad guys are doing.
Yeah, but do you have anybody other than Hispanics? I mean, is there principled people such as yourself or others that understand what's really going on, or is it just, I don't want to go back to Mexico?
I think it's mostly the Hispanic people, but I think this could actually grow into something pretty good, because what these guys, they've been here for 8 days now without leaving, some of them. And
well, they're just camping out?
They are going to be here. Huh?
They're just camping out?
As far as I know, I haven't been here at night, but they have been here. I don't know if they're staying at night, but they have been here for 8 days, and they are promising to be here for the next 82 days longer till this thing actually becomes law. And I think this is going to raise a lot of awareness for what the criminals in the Arizona Department, House of Representatives and the Senate, and our illustrious Governor Jan Brewer have done to destroy our country.
You know what's interesting on this issue is that there's a provision in there that if the local law enforcement does not do this, that they have an individual can sue them and get money. Like I get $5,000 for suing them because they're not doing, checking people's IDs or enforcing immigration or something like that. I mean, it's just very draconian. I mean, this is very reminiscent of, 30s Germany kind of stuff. It's scary.
In 1933, I posted an article last night about the German Jew laws last night on the site. Very, very interesting.
Really?
Yeah.
Are there a lot of parallels?
Yeah, well, it seems like we're going down the same path. I mean, I don't recall everything I wrote there in the, that was there in the article, but, they had at first they could do this, and then they couldn't do this, and then they couldn't be in office. Then anything that was in a Jew case couldn't be cited in a courtroom. It just goes down the line about what they have done to, marginalize people for their race.
Wow. Okay. Well, here we go. Well, thanks for that update. Thanks for calling in, Morpheus. You stay at it.
I encourage everyone who, is listening to the show, if you can, come on down and show your support of what's going on here, because this is not about immigration.
Absolutely
not about immigration.
We know. Thanks, Morpheus.
Take it easy, man.
All right, bye. Yeah, it's, we're everywhere. We're involved. And, I know where this is going. I mean, of course it's going to be Hispanics that are going to be, hey, man, this is, we know about human rights now. But, what happens? You got the Democrats down there. Hey, you need a voter registration form and here's your welfare, get on the list card. I mean, seriously, you think that doesn't happen? I seen it happen. Big giant 200,000 people down there. They got all these different programs down there. Just want to get more people on their list. I'm like, wow. Wow, that's not what that's what they want to make it about. The R's and D's work together on creating whatever the boogeyman is. It's part of the program, but neither of them are against this kind of control. That's not what this thing went right through. So I see where this is going. We have some other stories on Freedom's Phoenix about Oklahoma, and they're running with this kind of stuff in other states. It'll go to court. It'll just become a big election year distraction. That's all this is. It's to distract from the real issues that the government is insisting that you be ID'd on everything, every transaction. Your cash is going to start going away. You're going to start being able to track cash. You know, the new bills are coming out. You think there's not, heck, they already had RFID chips, you know, strips and so on. The other, you put them, a stack in your suitcase, kind of, ooh, that's $100 bills there. You know, run through the scanner. Yep, gotcha. You know, so I'm wow. What did we just have last week? This guy had 150 ounces, gold coins and so on, trying to get into Mexico. He's trying to get to Costa Rica or whatever. I'm just taking my goodie and going, yep, it's all ours now. Mexican government, they go, what are you charging them with? I don't know. We'll find something. It's ours. Ah, let's get to Meredith Whitney. All right, here we go. God, man, dang it. We have how much time? Yeah, we can probably get it done, most of it. Here we go.
The Senate is less than an hour away from a vote now to open up debate on financial reform. It's the first step toward what could be sweeping legislation for the banking industry overall. Join me now with her thoughts on that. Her outlook for the sector is Meredith Whitney. She is a CEO of Meredith Whitney Advisory Group. Meredith, it's always nice to have you on the program. Let's talk about financial reform. What do you think is going to come out into law based on what we know already to be in the Dodd bill? And how does that change the industry? Are you expecting this industry to go through real change in the coming couple of years?
The Dodd bill wall, you know, I'd call it squishy. So it sends a lot of things back to the regulators. So it doesn't actually enact anything. It doesn't actually enact the Volcker Rule. It just gives a lot more authority to the regulatory bodies to then decide on specific cases what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. What I expect to change on a continued basis is the big banks to continue to de-risk and the big banks to get more regulatory scrutiny over the businesses that have actually carried them out of this financial crisis. So that's the capital markets business. What hasn't changed and what really needs to change is the bank's pricing on basic businesses. So the large banks that control all the major loan products, the credit card market, the mortgage market, have forgotten how to price these products. And so they've moved away from that market. So you see nothing in the mortgage market and nothing in the credit card market actually expand for consumers. Those two markets are contracting dramatically. And that's because of the basic issue that the banks have forgotten how to price accurately for them. And with the CARD Act, it is more prohibitive for them to dynamically price these issues. So what it ends up leaving these business models is a capital markets business and a processing business.
So how do you think we'll see the business change? In other words, are we going to see asset sales, do you think, as a result of the financial reform? You say there's going to be less leverage, obviously, yeah. De-risking. So are we talking about smaller balance sheets?
You're going to have smaller balance sheets. Now, for the guys that adapt the fastest, I think that's a good thing because higher capital, lower returns. But for the guys that don't adapt, I expect those business models to be at risk of atrophying because, of course, if you can't price for risk and if you're not making loans to the riskier, who are you making loans to? Pretty much old people, right? So your business model runs risk of atrophying. This is on the pure lending side. On the other side, other things that have to change are, you know, you're moving away from expansion of credit across all different class lines, and it's really a class line issue, to now a debanking of the industry. So I think the middle class steadily gets debanked, moving out of the banking system and moving on to what is emerging rapidly as this prepaid business. So curiously, like Japan, when Japan had their banking crisis, the banks moved away from lending and predatory lenders moved to fill the void. You're starting to see that.
You created a whole new problem, actually.
Right.
Let me get your take on some specifics here. Goldman Sachs, as an investor, what are your thoughts on the fraud charges?
It's hard to know specifically on fraud, but and I'm not the first to say this, but who would have ever thought Goldman? I remember last Saturday waking up and seeing across every headline Goldman and fraud. And that damage, sadly, is done, whether they're guilty or they're not guilty. It gives a lot of the governments, particularly European governments that have bailed out so many of these failing institutions because of the credit crisis, ammunition to go after Goldman. And the state of Bavaria is no longer doing business with Goldman. It gives a lot of hobbled governments ammunition to go after what is the only scapegoat right now. And I'm not saying scapegoat is probably not the right word, but whether they're proven, you know, guilty or not, they're now they're being forced to play defensive, and the reason why they've done so well through this credit crisis is because while all the big banks have been imperiled by capital have been playing defensive, Goldman's playing offensive, gaining market share and whatnot.
Now they're on the defense.
Now they're on defense, and that costs business. There's
and
no way of looking at that.
We don't know how much business it's going to cost them, and we also don't know who else is out there wanting to sue them.
Right. Right. Well, it just becomes easy. So I can tell you anecdotally, you see small competitors hanging around the rim, you know, scratching their hooves, waiting to go after Goldman market share.
And I'll guarantee the people going after Goldman market share are ex-buddies of Goldman. This is, we'll talk about, you know, kind of deciphering what she's talking about. But I tell you what it means is, there's going to be new faces in this whole thing, but it's going to be the same old game. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Fix it. Fix what? They're going to fix it. You guys darn it, you're going to get fixed. And I don't know how, but they're going to try. So this is, you know, right now you look at, let me just hit the refresh button here. Yep, there goes silver, man. It's getting stupid. It started at 1810 this morning. It's up to 1852 now. That's like a big move. So precious metals, here we go. And then they'll push it back down, but all it means is it's just pent up demand again. You know, people are taking their contracts on their futures, these commodities, just paper, and they're going to say, you know what? I want to convert this paper into the real stuff. Give me. Well, I had it right next to my heart. You know, they can't find it. It's not here. Well, we got to go buy it out on the market. Then it starts shooting it up. People are going to start to take delivery, and it will get stupid. It will get, you go, oh, I don't want to buy, you know, silver now at, under $20 because, I mean, heck, it used to be under 10 just last year. It was, I'll wait for it to go down. Yeah, well, you're going to go, I remember when silver used to be in the double digits. Wasn't that, man, them good old days when I bought it back at 80. It's going to get dumb. Stupid. So, you know, what is that reflection of? The dollar. You know, Meredith Whitney, this is the main thing that she's going on about. They have been so long, these banks, out of actual real valuing assets in the real world that weren't made up numbers with just free money that's being pumped into the system by the Federal Reserve at almost zero interest. They have no idea how to price this stuff. They were just making money on the transaction. They didn't care what was priced. They were doing their hedge derivative. Yeah, they knew it was going to go down, and when it did, they'd make their money. That's what this AIG bailout thing was about, was like these insurance policies on this stuff, betting against, you know, selling short and betting against things. We got an insurance policy that this industry is going to die. Oh, it died. I'm so shocked. Give me all my money. Oh, we're out of money. We don't have the money. Oh, we need a bailout. We get bailout to AIG so then they can pay off Goldman Sachs. Thank you. Then AIG goes out. You know, what'd you think was going to happen? Just a game. And you're the victim. You don't even get to play. You just get to pay. So, all right. So now they're back. We're going to, you know, start playing banking again. Well, how do you evaluate the risk on credit card? How do you evaluate the risk on mortgages? Heck, housing is going to take another dump. They know, no, we're not playing that game anymore. So now they're sitting there with Freddie and Fannie, you know, with all this inventory. All this at the peak here in Phoenix, 40% of the houses, this is a couple years ago, 40% of the houses for sale were vacant. Not even collecting rent. And rent would be half of what your mortgage payment was anyway. People were just speculating because they had the money. What the heck? I can buy a house, whatever. I'll roll it over. And it was successful for a while. So they would buy more. Hey, I did one and I made $50,000 on this house over here, and they never even finished freaking breaking ground on it. These new developments, people would camp out at new developments for the chance to buy a home that hadn't even been built yet. And then before they even started breaking ground, they would sell it, make money. Then take that and go and buy, you know, three other houses until finally they got, you know, the music stopped and they got left without a chair. So how do these banks value this? How do they, you know, determine who can go buy a foreclosed? Yeah. And it's half what it was being sold for before, but it's got another 20% to go down. They know this. We don't want to play. So what do they do with credit cards? Meredith Whitney, she predicted this. I remember a couple of years ago, she goes, you watch. There will be at least $1 to $3 trillion of credit that will be sucked out of the system just by them lowering available credit lines on credit cards just overnight. You know, I owed money on a credit card, and we paid a bunch of it off, and then all of a sudden my new credit limit was what my new balance was. They just keep doing that, and they're doing it to everybody. You're paying off, you know, stuff. You know that your credit limit goes down along with what you owe. So you're not going to be able to, you know, get any more. You're not going to be able to go get, you know, I know a lot of people this had big impact on. They were, you know, I got $50,000, you know, that I can use my emergency on my credit card and that kind of, ooh, wait a minute. It's not there anymore. Now what? So this is, you know, they're going, okay, so what are they doing? Well, it's all smoke and mirrors. They're trying to, you know, offer banking services. You know, we'll move your money around for you and take our cut. We'll something. I don't even know what they're doing. We'll take the money from the government and kind of throw it in the system some way, but where? So here come the predatory lenders. Here come the check cashing things. Here comes the payday loans. Here comes, you know, there's people that need whatever. But I, you know, sooner or later, we're all going to have to just, and it's happening already. They just stop making their mortgage payments. They can't afford it. Yeah, and when you kick me out, I'll go live with Aunt Tilma, or I'll, you know, in the Lone Prairie of, or we got our RV that we stopped making payments on. We'll go live in that in the Forest Day Love something. You know, people will survive. But will the banks? Will the taxpayer? Will the U.S. freaking government? Well, other countries are going down right now. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Spain. It's next. We'll be right back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day here in the morning on RBN Network from Phoenix, Arizona, BEA, beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. And we want to go and see what's going on in Europe, man. Let's see if we can get this to go. Here we go.
Spain is now the third European country.
Oh, and then the sound went out. Oh, man, I hate CNBC videos of boogers. We'll go ahead and refresh this and do it. Because what's going on, they call it pig. You know, it's, Portugal, Italy, Ireland or Iceland, and Spain and Greece, and, you know, it's the pig. You know, they keep saying pig, and I'm like, pig? What the heck are you talking about, pig? That's what they mean. Portugal, Italy, Iceland, and Greece and Spain. So here it comes.
Third European country.
That booger. Well, this is what's going to happen. As these countries start to implode financially, there is going to be screaming like it's going on for Greece right now for the European Union to bail them out. Will they? Well, what if they don't? Well, there's a cascade of countries, you know, one right after another that's behind it. And what they're looking for, stronger countries like France and Germany, to, their taxpayers to bail. Well, we're all part of the union. It's kind of like going, you know, to Massachusetts and Florida to bail out Arizona and California. And they go, maybe not. We went through this during the Ford administration. New York City was begging for them to be saved. You know, so maybe some of you remember that. And they go, nah, we're good. And they were screaming loud, too, man. They were like, oh, save us, save us. We're going to go broke, and there won't be water. And then we'll Wall Street and, well, kind of, you know, where's our money? And they said, nope, not going to do it. Well, I don't even remember what happened, but, you know, they're still there. Okay. But, you know, the big thing is going to be taxes. It's going to be an excuse to raise more money. Well, it's happening city by city. And, of course, it's always under the threat that, oh, my goodness, we're going to have to do away with what? Police! Aren't you scared we're going to do away with the police? A police, you know, less police state? I vote for that. Because where do you think they're getting a lot of this money? From citations. I had the state treasurer on one time. Her name is Carol Springer. And back, like 03, I had her on. And she was a state treasurer. And she said, I go, well, what happens when they have these shortfalls? I mean, because back then, you know, they were having a big giant shortfall and they were doing some unconstitutional stuff. And I filed suit in Arizona Supreme Court, you know, forcing them balance budget, blah, blah, blah. And she was going, you know, Ernie, they just write more traffic citations. And I go, what? She goes, yeah, the Arizona Department of Public Safety, the Highway Patrol, you know, they just, you know, kind of, you know, we expect a little more out of y'all. So instead of them helping motorists or being out, doing just, you know, ka-ching. So now what do they have? They have photo radar on the highways. I'm like, wow, 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 wow. Once you start down that road, which, you know, it's always been available, especially small towns, that's what speed traps are, you know, where does it stop? And what's our alternative? How are we to what? Do you start, you know, taking burning tires to the cameras? That's what they were doing in the United Kingdom. You know, they're so unpopular. Now they have, what'd they say, over 4 million closed circuit surveillance cameras in the United Kingdom? 4 million? Just in London, it's over 500,000 that we know of. So they went to satellite to give tickets. You know, is there any limit to their imagination? You know, is there a limit? You know, and a lot of people, they think I make this stuff up. You know, I go, all right, let's go. Scammer 2.0 satellite. I'm assuming I know how to spell satellite. Satellite speeding. I just put it in a Google search on Freedom's Phoenix here. Yep, here we go. All right, now I'm going to read this to you. I don't make this stuff up, all right? This is out of the Telegraph. This is a main newspaper in United Kingdom. New speed cameras trap motorists from space. A new type of speed cameras which can use satellites to measure average speed over long distances are being tested in Britain. The cameras, which combine number plate reading technology with a global positioning satellite receiver, are similar to those used in roadworks. The AA, I guess it's the Automotive Association or something, said it believed the new system could cover a network of streets as opposed to a straight line and was probably geared up to zones in residential areas. The Home Office is testing the cameras at two sites, one in Southwark, London, and the other A374 between Antony and Tarpoint in Cornwall. The speed spike system, which calculates average speed between any two points in the network, has been developed by PIPS Technology Limited, an American-owned company with a base in Hampshire. Details of the trials are contained in a House of Commons report. The company said it is in its evidence that the cameras enabled number plate capture in all weather conditions, 24 hours a day. It also referred to the system's low cost and ease of installation.
The system can be used for main road enforcement, for congestion reduction and speed enforcement, and could help to eliminate rat runs and cut speeds outside schools. Rat runs, I'm not sure what that means. I guess they run away. It added it could also reduce the need for speed humps. Okay. The development of speed cameras has raised concerns about expanding state surveillance. The Home Office said it was unable to comment on the trials because of commercial confidentiality. The AA said it would watch the system carefully, but it did not believe there was anything sinister. It is a natural evolution of the technology that is out there, a spokesperson said. Yep, that's exactly what it is. It is an evolution of the man. Satellites. And what'd they say? Average speed between point A and B. So they track you, starting where you start. Oh, okay, got, you know, somebody started. There you go. You know what? Your average speed was more than what we said it should have been. Ticket. Whew. Where'd you think it was going? You know, and you wonder, well, man, boy, if Nazi Germany had this kind of technology, oh, that would be, well, you know, the Nazi regimes do. I know there's some difference. You know, they just got to, you know, wear less brown shirts and more suit and shiny ties. You know, what's the difference? Heck, you know, it was IBM that supplied all the punch card information to be able to track and go get, you know, the Jews in Nazi Germany anyway. You know, it was this IBM punch card kind of, you know, fill it out, clunk, 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 clunk. Night of broken glass, here they come. You know, so, and then a lot of times you'll find out that a lot of the big bad guys that came out of this later stuff were the ones that did it anyway. You know, eliminating competition. So I'm going, oh, wow, 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 wow. What's the solution? You and I are the solution. We're just, you know, can we not? You know, I mean, it's technology is what's going to, you know, hopefully save us. You know, we had talking to Frosty yesterday about immigration. Oh, no, you'll never, 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 not enough solar, not enough. They don't want there to be technological solutions to the problems that they bring up. They don't want that. They want to get rid of the Mexicans. They want to get rid of, you know, in the name of, and they're being supported and amping this up because it supplies more surveillance, more satellites, you know, more drones, you know, more police state, more Homeland Security, more, you know, papers, please. A California-based startup, Amonix, I guess how you say it, A-M-O-N-I-X, has received $129 million in venture capital investments to further its commercialization of concentrated photovoltaic technology. The company's product combines powerful lenses, a tracking system, and solar cells for large, highly efficient solar power installations. The funding could give the company and the emerging field of concentrated photovoltaics the boost it needs for widespread utility-scale developments. We've looked at 100 solar companies in the last 18 months, and Amonix is the one that stood out to us as having breakout potential, says Ben Cortlang, a partner of venture capital firm Kleiner Perkins, Caulfield, and Byers, which led the recent investment. Amonix recently launched its newest solar concentrator, which converts 1/4 of the sunlight that falls on it into AC electricity. That's compared with the approximately 18% system efficiency, including inverters that convert solar's DC power to usable AC power, or the most efficient photovoltaic systems that don't use special optics or track the sun. Let me tell you what this is. If you remember The Man with the Golden Gun, it was a James Bond movie, and the man with the golden gun, he had this big solar. The whole premise of the thing was there was this one chip that it took all these mirrors, and it come out of the little mountaintop there, and it collected the sun, and it focused it, and then the lenses brought it down to something the size of a deck of cards, okay? You know, it was like a square, you know, square thing, and all this sunlight, it was like concentrating like a laser that went straight onto this disc. That's what converted the sunlight into electricity in a concentrated form. That's what they're talking about. I mean, if you can imagine it, sooner or later it's coming. You know, they're going, that's a cool idea. Science fiction writers, we need to... You know, I remember a book by L. Neil Smith to where there was, in the future, there was this one dictator that all he did was he put these guys in a drug-induced state and he had them in these cells, and all he had was them dreaming. And as a dream, they come up in their kind of, you know, dazed state, and they would, you know, dictate their dreams to these people. You know, just a dream, just to think of, just imagination. And then, whoa, that's a cool idea. You know, transporters, you know, being able to blah, blah, fill in all these different ideas. And then he'd send the scientific minds on doing that idea. Because they'd lost their own imagination, I guess, or whatever. So, and I always thought of that. I'm going, you know, anything that I imagine sooner or later comes to pass, whether we know it or not. So I'm just going, you know, you read science magazines, you're starting to go, yep, there it comes. Humanity is amazing. We are amazing. In anticipation, how like an angel, Shakespeare would say. You know, I'm if you can imagine it, here it comes. Well, you know, James Bond, when was this done? The 60s? 70s? I think it was probably late 60s, Man with a Golden Gun. Sean Connery. Marta Pena. And what happens is they take this idea. I guess, you know, they had the idea it was, you know, feasible, you know, eventually. Well, here it is. They will concentrate sunlight into like a, you know, a concentrated magnifying glass. You know, you have your own magnifying glass above, you know, an ant stamp. And it just tracks the sun, and it just focuses on this small dot. Boom. High efficiency, direct AC electricity. Okay. So what's Frosty's excuse now? With concentrated sunlight, heck, you could just, you know, distill water from the ocean. You know, it's getting to the point to where all the excuses are eliminated. Then what? Are we willing to give up our freedom for some perceived threat that somebody else is screaming about when the real problem is government? It's something else. There's always a distraction. There's always them. There's always an enemy. You know, Frosty's closed off his mind to this. He's like, I don't want to know. No, it's not possible. It can never happen. Really? And if I prove that it could, does it matter? No. They don't care. You know, it's not about the rights. It's about control. You know, there's judges right now, you know, you have them going after the Michigan militia and so on. They're, you know, these guys, oh, they're bad, they're bad, they're bad, they're bad. And a federal judge, you know, challenged prosecutors Wednesday to show that 9 members of the Michigan militia accused of plotting war against the government had done more than just talk about it. And should they be, you know, remain locked up? And I remember they also had another story. They go to the defense attorney, and he was asking them, all right, prove they're not a danger. Seriously? Or is that what we're supposed to do now? They're guilty, and then we got to prove them innocent before we even go to trial? You know, so I'm just, wow, wow, wow. Well, now it's kind of, I guess, a lot of feedback. You know, people are like, now they're kind of going to the prosecutor saying, well, okay, maybe you should, you know, show that they're a threat. U.S. District Judge Victoria Roberts heard nearly 10 hours of testimony and arguments over 2 days. She did not make a decision about whether the 9 will remain in custody, saying only that a ruling would come soon. The members of a southern militia group called Huttery, whatever that is, have been in custody for a month. An indictment accuses them of weapons violations and a rare crime, conspiring to commit sedition or rebellion against the government by first killing police officers. Prosecutors say the public would be at risk if the 9 were released, but defense lawyers claim the government has overreached with a criminal case based mostly on hateful speech. Then you find out that the hateful speech, amped up by the FBI informant, you know, who's in charge of, you know, I'll be in charge of the explosives, you know, and this happens, you know, I'll tell you this. I haven't finished watching it yet because I was just too tired, went to sleep. But Invisible Empire. And it's Jason Burmess, and I'll have him on the show tomorrow. You know, he's coming on in the afternoon show tomorrow, so you want to check that out. And I'll try and get him on the morning later, too, but that's the only time he had available. And Jason Burmess did Invisible Empire and working with Alex Jones on marketing, I guess. And I started watching. You know, it's all stuff that you know. You know, it's not nothing new in there, but you bring it all together from a young mind in their 20s that's out of, you know, college, kind of just looking at this stuff. And here's the guy that did the movie Loose Change about 9/11. It's had over 100 million views. How can you not have an impact with 100 million views? Well, I'll do an evaluation of Invisible Empire. I'll have it finished tonight. and then we'll have them on tomorrow. There's a whole generation here that sees what's coming. How the bad guys going to react to this? The way they always do, with a billy club. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Oh, the clone army is coming. There's more stuff coming. I'm telling you, and there's going to be a reason why. There's another thing that's on the horizon. Here in Arizona, we have watched closely what's happened with the Pat Tillman story. And this was Hollywood. Oh, man, it was big. Just a couple weekends ago, we went, the family, all my kids and grandbaby and everything, we all went to the Phoenix Zoo. You know, my son-in-law knows one of the directors there on the board of directors and doing lots of, we got discounts to get in, and we all ganged up, and his mother's visiting from Pennsylvania. We're going to go spend probably one of the last weekends before blazing heat. Oh, my God, you're going to die weather, and went to the zoo, you know. And I don't know, that's another thing. I'm not a big fan of zoos. You know, you get there and you go, you know, I'd rather just see a good life documentary of them actually out. But anyway, so it was interesting. We had a good time. Well, it was also the day that they celebrate Pat Tillman's death. I think it's either his birthday or something. They always have a Pat Tillman run. And it ends at the Sun Devil Stadium, ASU, where he was a player. And then he went on to become Arizona Cardinal, and he, you know, favorite. Well, when the 9/11 happened, he and his brother went to Iraq. We want to be soldier, infantry, man, let's go do it. Well, he immediately saw this is all crap. I mean, and he was real open about it, too. He couldn't wait to get back in his tour. And, you know, he gave up gazillions of dollar contract and everything. I'm going, America. I want to help America. He had a tradition in his family, America. And he found out, oh, heck no. In fact, he wanted to meet with Chomsky when he got back, and he had it scheduled that he was going to meet with him, and we need to get rid of him. Well, whether it was friendly fire and intentional or not, it's not even the point. It was that they lied about it. There's a documentary coming out. Los Angeles Times writer, it's at the top of Freedom's Phoenix right now, and he's writing about it. It was in June 2006, I flew to San Jose to see Alex Garwood, Tillman's brother-in-law, who had been acting as a family spokesman in the absence of much speaking of any kind by the rest of the family. Garwood was cooperative, friendly, and clearly a person who knew lots more than he was saying. By then, the story of Tillman being killed by the enemy had changed to friendly fire. Still, I didn't press Garwood much. I was looking for tears when I should have been looking for facts. My column ran on the 4th of July. I blathered on about barbecues and water skiing with the family, about cherishing the freedoms we have because of heroes such as Tillman. All I missed were some rockets' red glare. I was so pleased with myself. Heroes are a columnist's best friend. Thursday night, on the 6th-year anniversary of Tillman's death, I went to screening of The Tillman Story. It is a documentary about the quest of Tillman's mother, Mary, Danny Tillman, to get the real facts of what happened on that hillside. Halfway through, I was mortified. I realized why the Tillman story has stayed in my gut. Danny Tillman did what a nation full of high-paid, overblown journalists should have done. She went after the real story, while the beautiful people on TV and the nerds with notepads broadcast and wrote more morality plays, she got in the military's face, in the government's face. She didn't let up. She was doing journalism while journalists were doing what we mostly do now. Chase web, bring the music down, please. Chase web hits and take shortcuts to higher profits. A housewife got the real story, or as much of it as anybody probably will. Professionals trained to do so gathered moss and wrote slop. The youngest of the three Tillman boys, Richard, said of his mother, she hit the ball out of the park, but the government kept moving the fences back. The documentary won't be out until August. It won't be in many theaters, and it won't be around for long. You need to watch it. It will make you angry and ashamed, like I am. The Tillman story has been a big thing here in Arizona because, you know, he was a homeboy in a lot of ways, ASU and Arizona Cardinals. And he represented for the propaganda machine, you know, exactly what they were looking for, which is why it would have been so devastating when he came back. Watch the movie.